Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner. Get out, ball. Get out. Get out of here. Get out.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome to your Tuesday edition of Fantasy Baseball Today. It is June 18th. I'm Adam Azer. I got Scott White and Chris Towers here, and I'm going to start the show with a little bit of an experiment. I'm going to ask Scott and Chris for, I don't know, one word, one sentence to sum up last night's action, and I think we're all going to say the same thing. Chris, why don't you go first? Sum up last night's action.
I really did not want to go first for this exercise, so I'm just going to not do it.
Okay, Scott, how about you?
One word? We're going to have the same answer.
Like, we did not talk about this before the show.
Like, so obvious. The storyline of last night was so obvious. It was just great pitching. Great pitching. Almost all around. Okay. Right? I mean,
I was thinking what started out as great and then became unraveled in the middle innings in the case of like Mike Clevenger Wade Miley.
Oh, two guys.
But okay, sure. Great pitching. There are a lot of walks.
Great pitching.
You can never please Scott White.
No, it's true. No. Yeah.
Nothing's ever good enough.
Chris Archer's good enough.
I mean, well, he acted like it was obvious.
I think it was pretty obvious. Okay. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of hitting. I mean, if there's one like standout hitting performance yesterday, it was probably Biggio. We'll talk about
Atlanta Braves.
Well, the Braves, they're hitting everyone. So Jorge Soler, we got to talk about. Oscar Mercado homered again. That was nice. So welcome to the show. Here we go. Monday standouts. I think we should start with Mike Clevenger. He went 4 2/3. He gave up 3 hits, 5 runs. I think he gave up 3 and then 2 more scored after a reliever came in. So they were charged to Clevenger. 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, only 8 swinging strikes. Texas, by the way, leads baseball in strikeouts per game. So you would have thought a little bit more swinging strikes, but whatever. He did get 7 strikeouts and 4 2/3. Look, he's first 2 starts, for all of you who don't remember, 7 innings of no runs, 12 strikeouts against the White Sox, and then 5 innings, no runs, 10 strikeouts against Toronto, and he missed, 2 months. So
wasn't it combined 2 hits, 3 hits, 2, something like that? He was looking like he was taking another step forward after the breakout season with higher velocity than ever, and he did hit 98.
He averaged 96.5 with his fastball last night, which was even higher than what he was doing the first couple of starts. So, yeah, for a guy who missed
2 months, I feel like he didn't have that much of a rehab assignment. So it was probably just kind of running. He looked good at the start, and then I think kind of ran out of gas. Probably just needs some time to build back up.
Sure. So I think we're mostly encouraged by the velocity, by the strikeouts, and by what we saw the first 2 starts. It is worth pointing out that he now has 7 walks and 16 2/3. And if there's one thing that might hold Clevenger back, it is that. But last year he was 15th in points, 17th in Roto, with probably bad win-loss luck, 13 wins with a 3.02 ERA, 207 strikeouts and 200 innings. So I think don't panic at all on Clevenger based on yesterday.
We always talk about when a guy's first coming off the IL, especially after a lengthier stay like this, you might want to give them a shot. Now, this was a 2-start week for Clevenger, so you wanted to start him anyway, but it's not totally surprising that his first time seeing major league hitters in 2 months, he wasn't incredibly sharp, but it could have gone a lot worse. He looks very good still.
All right, Scott, give me a standout from yesterday.
Standout from yesterday. I want to go straight to the Bizz. Kevin Biggio. Kevin in the Woods. Mm-hmm. 2-homer game. His second 2-homer game, by the way, in
five games. Yep.
Yeah. No, he's really picking it up at the plate. And like one thing he was doing from the start, from the initial call up, was walking a lot. Which is why I was encouraged and really still motivated to own him, even despite the slow start. But it looks like he's starting to come around now, and second base is still a position where a lot of people have a need. So if somebody gave up on him early, you might want to make another play at Kevin Biggio.
Yeah, I picked up Biggio in two leagues last night. Now, I dropped Biggio six games ago. In his last five games, he is 8-for-19 with four home runs and two doubles. And the first two-homer game was at Baltimore. You know how I feel about guys who homer off Baltimore. So I wasn't beating myself up over dropping him. But now I'm beating myself up a little bit because the last four games have been at Houston and then one game against the Angels. So he's faced better pitching, obviously. So not that he faced like studs last night. But yeah, I mean, 44% owned. Chris, you and I talked about Biggio last week, and you said that his patience might actually be his downfall, basically. At least that's what some of the scouting reports said.
Yeah, that was one of the concerns that scouts had. He's always walked a ton in the minors, but one of the concerns was it was as much about being passive. And so far, no player in baseball has been less aggressive than Kevin Biggio, and it's worked out great on pitches outside of the strike zone. He swings at them only 12% of the time, which is definitely what you want. The problem is he only swings at 66% in the strike zone, which it's not a terribly low rate. It would be like the 35th lowest in baseball if he had played the full season and qualified. So it's not nearly as bad as it probably could be. And it does seem like he does a good job of identifying which pitches he can't handle and laying off. So I think there's encouraging signs for sure. He definitely needs to be owned across the board. He's going to get himself into a lot of two strike counts. And I think you could see, you know, batting average issues for him as a result of that. But the power is really impressive. He should start stealing more bases moving forward. So I think there's a lot to like about him. I think he's must own.
I thought I picked him up in a league. Yeah, I did.
Kevin Biggio.
He's now outfield eligible and second base eligible, and it appears that he is one appearance away from being first base eligible as well. So, okay, that's Biggio. Chris, you have a standout from Monday you'd like to talk about?
I assume we'll get to Lance Lynn at some point, so I'll put that off. Let's talk about Eliezer Hernandez. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce this guy's name, but he's a pitcher for the Marlins. And another one who has looked decent.
Oh my gosh. What a homer. What a homer. I mean, go ahead, Stallion.
Six shutout innings or one run innings against the Cardinals, was it? Six strikeouts, one walk. He was really good last night. 12 swinging strikes on 101 pitches. That's okay, but the slider had 7 on 31. I don't know how long he's going to stay in the rotation, but he deserves a look based on what he's done in his first couple of starts.
And not just that, at AAA, you know, obviously he got overshadowed by Zach Gallen, but at AAA, 9 starts, 1.13 ERA, 1.02 WHIP, 12.9 strikeouts per 9 innings. I'm actually disappointed in him having another good start because the door is wide open for Zach Gallen now with Urania on the 60-day IL. I feel like the fact Jordan Yamamoto had a good first start earned him a second one. But now, even if Yamamoto comes back down to earth in the second start, well, Hernandez is a roadblock because Caleb Smith's about to come back. There's about to be only one opening. Still think it's going to be sooner than later for Zach Gallen. They have, a 40-man roster spot cleared with the guy going on the 60-day IL and a young rotation. Not everybody's been that successful in that rotation so far. But this is another possible roadblock for Gallen now, Eliezer Hernandez.
Caleb Smith's going to bump up against an innings limit at some point. There's going to be an opportunity for Zach Gallen. But yeah, right now it probably looks like they need at least one more spot to open up. Maybe two if, you know, they were willing to call up Yamamoto and Hernandez ahead of Gallen before this. And there wasn't a 40-man roster spot available before this, but it's also the Marlins, so opening a 40-man roster spot if they wanted to get Zach Gallen up would not have been too difficult to do. So that's my concern. I think we definitely see him at some point after the All-Star break. I would just, because Hernandez has looked good and because he's been so good at AAA, because Yamamoto looked good in his first start and isn't a nothing prospect, I think we'll see those guys get the next couple of chances, even when Caleb Smith comes back.
Oh, can we please stop talking about the Marlins? I mean, at least we're talking about a guy who has the word Azer in his first name, so that's good. But we have to talk about the Yankees, or at least the former Yankee, Lance Lynn. Because if you look at Lance Lynn, yeah, this is an awkward transition.
That was the most self-glorifying sequence of sentences I've ever heard in my life.
Adam, compared to the way the intro of the podcast went, I thought that was A+.
You guys screwed up the intro. It was so obvious that you needed to talk about pitching. Now, Lance Lynn, man. I mean, okay, so his last eight starts, he has a 2.92 ERA. He has 66 strikeouts to eight walks in 52 and a third. 12% swinging strikes. He basically only throws fastballs. It's really weird. Now, he's got good velocity, but I don't know what to make of it except this. He's basically doing what he did with the Yankees last year, except the ERA is so much better. Well, okay, that's actually not 100% true. All right, let's take a step back. Last year with the Yankees, 54 and a third innings, 4.14 ERA. And very similar walk to strikeout rates as this year. This year, 93 innings, 4.16 ERA, so nearly identical. However, like I said, it's been much better after a rocky start. But the walk rate, the strikeout rate, the hit rate, pretty similar to what we saw with the Yankees last year. The overall ERA, 4.16 this year, 4.14 last year with the Yankees. I don't know. You tell me what to do with Lance Lynn, because
you tell me what to do with Lance
Lynn. He shouldn't be good, but he has been really good. I'm not telling you anything, Chris. Tell me.
Yeah, he's throwing his four-seamer a lot more and his sinker a lot less than he had in years past, and that does seem to have made a bit of a difference. It is a much better swing and miss pitch, but it's basically fastball cutter. That's basically all he's throwing, and then he'll mix in a curveball and a changeup occasionally.
Does anyone buy it? Does anyone really believe that Lance Lynn is someone we're going
to
be starting?
Well, that's kind of always, like, with the going back to his Cardinals days, he was a guy who pretty much lived with three fastballs, right? That's basically what he threw, and it worked well for him then. You could try shopping him, because I think it's reasonable to be skeptical of the performance. Try shopping him, but like, you're not going to. Because he's Lance Lynn, because his season-long ERA is over four, you're probably not going to get a pitcher back in such a deal that is capable of putting together the kinds of starts he has. Eight in a row now, quality starts, six of them with eight strikeouts or more. Like, I'm just inclined to ride it out as long as it lasts, because that whatever pitching spot he's filling for you now is one that's going to be difficult to fill with. I think certainly anything off the waiver wire, and I think in the trade market too, just because of his history.
You know who you might be able to get? Herman Marquez. That'd be maybe one that I would target for him.
All right, those are some standouts. More pitchers coming up later, because obviously, as everybody knows, the storyline from yesterday, great pitching performances. Noah Syndergaard's on the IL. He could miss just one start. San Diego's calling up Logan Allen to face Milwaukee today. Starting pitcher Logan Allen, does he matter?
He was kind of exciting coming into the season, but I think he has an ERA over five at AAA this year, which,
AAA. It's tough because they're in the PCL. So
yeah,
that
PCL,
AAA baseball plus PCL. That's a really tough environment. But he still has a career like three ERA, right?
I'm not sure exactly, but it's probably good. Yeah, I don't think he's the kind of call-up I'm rushing out to add. But, if he has a good first turn, then... I guess he's worth monitoring in like a Jordan Yamamoto sort of way. If I could bring up a Marlins pitcher again,
please
always
have
to.
Giancarlo Stanton will be back today. Jose Altuve actually could be back today as well. JT Realmuto sat with a groin injury. Manny Machado is appealing a one game suspension. Edwin Encarnacion batted fifth for the Yankees. Giovanni Urshela sat. Byron Buxton sat with a wrist issue. Jay Bruce sat with a hamstring injury. Hunter Pence is on the IL with a groin injury, and Willie Calhoun is back, guys. Willie Calhoun batted fifth against Cleveland. He is in seven games this year. He's batting .385 with two home runs, two walks, three strikeouts. And Calhoun is 46% owned. So since they're both outfield eligible, if you saw Kevin Biggio and Willie Calhoun on your waiver wire, who would you prioritize?
Biggio. I mean, Calhoun, it's a seven-game sample of success and the first success he's seen in the majors after a couple of failed stints. But, if you need another outfield, I'd absolutely pick up Calhoun. The fact that Pence is down, there's an opening for him, and has had kind of a rebound season at AAA, a power hitter who doesn't strike out much. It could be it could be finally him coming into his own. It's compared to Biggio, I'd rather go Biggio.
Excited about big, beefy baseball boy, Willie Calhoun.
Okay, well,
I think in five outfielder leagues, he definitely should be on.
Rank these outfielders: Willie Calhoun, Oscar Mercado, Ramon Laureano.
Calhoun, Mercado, Laureano.
I think I would go Mercado, Calhoun, Laureano.
Nomar Mazara is going to avoid the IL, might be able to DH today. Dallas Keuchel expected to start against the Nationals on Friday. Teoscar Hernandez left with a wrist injury. The Marlins were shut out for the 13th time this season. Yikes. Hunter Dozier started a rehab assignment. If you looked at the box score and you saw, oh, Jose Ramirez doubled. Yeah. It was a very cheap double. Don't get too excited. And Philadelphia, Washington, the game was rained out. They will play a doubleheader tomorrow. Quick bullpen notes here. Ian Kennedy got his fifth save in 11 days. Eighth for the season. Jose Leclerc is just not doing anything to help his case. Chris Woodward wants to get him back in the role, but Leclerc gave up another run, a home run yesterday. But he hasn't walked anybody in nine straight appearances. But right now, it's Sean Kelly's job. Meanwhile, Anthony Bass struggled again. So right now, I guess probably Roenis Elias the favorite to get saves there and in Seattle. And what did we make of Ryan Brazier coming in a 2-0 game at Minnesota and throwing a scoreless ninth for his seventh save, Scott Ryan Brazier, Brazier Crane?
Yeah, seventh save, first since April 21st. And that looks like as messy of a committee now as maybe even messier than the Rays, honestly, because I think there's more than three arms they could go to in the ninth inning.
Okay, fair enough. So listen, coming up on the show, I got some sneaky storylines. Some impact from the Edwin Encarnacion trade that we have not talked about. Some pretty interesting stats on Mike Trout and Mookie Betts and why, am I clickbait kind of thing? They might not be as good as you think they are. Plus, Alex Bregman Yeah, exactly. And everything you need to know about yesterday's starting pitchers. Your emails, team name Tuesday, fantasybaseball at cbsi.com, and we'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Thank you very much to ZipRecruiter for sponsoring today's show. All right, let's get some sneaky storylines. Here we go. Gary Sanchez. Scott, is he your number one catcher in your rankings?
Yes.
Okay.
Number one.
Well, I got some bad news for you. He has made eight starts as a designated hitter this year. And in those eight starts, he's batting .333 and slugging .909. Six home runs and 33 at-bats. I don't know. He's gonna make even six more starts as a DH. Eight starts. Rest of season, you know, because of Encarnacion.
I hear you.
Okay.
I'm just not sure the offensive skills for any other catcher, especially since it seems like Real Muto's taken a bit of a step back this year. I'm not sure there's any comparison. I mean, the home run pace Sanchez is on. You look at, like, at least last I checked, like ex-WOBA, he's actually underperformed that. So he's really good.
I am
and
not
Real
saying.
Muto, it is worth noting, he's underperforming his ex-WOBA as well. His actually low, I think it's the best of his career. So that's worth noting that there could be much better days ahead for JT Real Muto. I still would take Sanchez number one.
I am not saying Sanchez should not be the number one catcher. I'm just letting fantasy owners know he might not play quite as much as he did before the trade. Speaking of which,
I mean, they could give Encarnacion days off, you know.
Yeah, they will.
They can give Luke Voigt an occasional day off.
I know, but when they do that, yeah, I just don't know that Sanchez is going to DH. I mean, it makes sense like that Stanton would DH and Gardner would play left field, you know what I mean? But we'll see. Speaking of catchers not playing as much, we've been very happy with Omar Narvaez. Sneaky storyline, though. Omar Narváez has started 9 games in June, and Tom Murphy has started 7 games in June at catcher. And Murphy, over the last 21 days, is the number 5 catcher in points leagues, but he's actually number 1 in Roto. Why the discrepancy? Because he's not a full-time player, or, you know, full-time for a catcher. But in the last 21 days, Tom Murphy's batting .333 with 6 home runs, no walks, 11 strikeouts. But, you know, Chris, it's not, I don't know that so much that I'm excited about Murphy, but I just think for Narváez owners, it's significant that he's really eating into Narváez's playing time.
I'm a little bit excited. I'm not unexcited about Tom Murphy, at least as a number 2 catcher, which, you know, is a little bit damning with faint praise, but his minor league numbers were really good. He was someone that we always wanted to see get a chance with the Rockies, and maybe he's, you know, turning into a guy who, at least against lefties, can really rake, and that might be enough to make him a number 2 catcher. Narváez has also slowed down quite a bit. He hasn't been terrible, but basically he split the season in two. He had like a 980 OPS in the first half of the season so far, and it's been like a 720 since then. So he's slowed down enough that it's not necessarily this huge loss.
It's pretty much just lefties Murphy starting against. He's only made, in that span of time you were talking about, only one start against a righty.
No, is that right?
Narváez started 4 straight games before the last 2, one of which was against the lefty. So, yeah, I mean, I still think Narváez is a guy, but Murphy's one of the better backup catchers right now.
Yeah, I guess they have faced a lot of lefties this month. All right, well, that's actually very helpful. So that's better news for Narváez than I thought, because it could just be a platoon thing. Okay, I don't think we have to spend much time on this, but sneaky storyline, Daniel Vogelbach is probably going to play just about every day. He'll start against lefties. That's according to the broadcast last night. I couldn't wait to watch the Royals-Mariners game, so I've got that little nugget for you. Here's a sneaky storyline. Alex Bregman has been much better in points leagues than Roto leagues. Number 2 shortstop in points leagues, number 6 shortstop in Roto leagues. Bregman, when I say Roto, I'm talking 5x5 with batting average instead of OBP. Bregman's batting .265 with 19 home runs and 3 steals. The runs and RBIs are good, but they're not great. 48 RBIs, 47 runs. He's got 14 more walks than strikeouts, so that is why he's been so much better in points leagues. It's the batting average is a little low, but I mean, I would say that, hey, if you made Alex Bregman your first round pick in a Roto league, you're probably a little disappointed. Sorry to say it.
I mean, he is underperforming expected batting average again. That seems to happen. But and like the same time, like being sixth at shortstop is different from being sixth at most other positions. I imagine a hot streak could move him. I don't know if it'd be first. Who's first in Roto? Is it like Mondesi
or is it
somebody?
Trevor Story.
It's Trevor Story. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But I imagine they're all roughly in the same range.
Yeah, I mean,
they are.
We're probably talking about a difference of 5 hits over the course of the season so far between where you expected his average to be, which was like .285, and where it actually is. So that's a single, every 3 weeks,
and
basically falling in.
He has the highest on base percentage among shortstops, at least ones with significant amount of plate appearances. So the OBP is so much better than the batting average, and he'll probably get the batting average up, right, Bregman?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So he's had a really good year, kind of quietly, but 19 home runs, 55 walks to 41 strikeouts for Bregman. I mean, I don't think you can really call him a buy low, could you?
No, not at all.
No. I mean, if nothing else, like he's validated the power breakthrough a year ago and then some, right? He's on pace for even more home runs. So he's really good.
Yeah, I wonder if he just, sometimes guys don't, his production may be sort of evenly distributed. He hasn't gone on like a heater where we're talking about him a lot, noticing him, which isn't bad. Just, you know, that could be why he's snuck under the radar. All right, sneaky storyline. Mike Trout and Mookie Betts each have 7 steals. And we're about 70 games into the season, so that's not so good. Trout was thrown out last night. He has 7 steals and 9 attempts. Right now, Mike Trout, this is going to blow your mind when I get to Betts, but Trout is the number 3 overall hitter in points, number 5 in Roto. Betts is the number 14 hitter in points, number 44 in Roto. in a batting, number 44 hitter in a batting average Roto League, Mookie Betts. I think it's significant that they're on pace for like 16 steals, because that's a big drop, you know, from the 26 to 30 or so that we would typically expect from them. And I don't know. What's your take on that, Scott?
Betts is pretty much underperforming across the board, at least compared to our expectations, power-wise, batting average-wise. He's not hitting the ball as hard last year, so his XBA is actually only 270, while, you know, it was 314 last year, and he hit over 300, of course. What did he hit last year? He hit 346 last year? My goodness.
Pretty good.
Like, he is a guy who, like, you know, tends to just... He tends to hit for higher averages. What am I trying to say here? I think it's probably a good buy low opportunity, I guess, is the way to sum it up in a roto league. Like, even if you're not necessarily sure the steals are going to bounce back, I think there's a good case to be made that it's just kind of a quiet start to the season for a guy with a pretty reliable track record, particularly in terms of batting average. You know, we've only seen in his five full seasons in the majors now, we've only seen once where his batting average was below 290, and it was in the 260 range like it is now. But I think that's more the outlier than the other end of the spectrum for him.
And I don't think there's anything at all there with Mike Trout.
Well, let me just say this. Okay, so Scott was just talking about Mookie Betts. Let me talk about Mike Trout. I'm going to look at the last two seasons in which he stole 11 bases in 2015, 16 bases in 2014. So he wasn't really a huge base stealer. Where did he finish?
But this is something that we've talked about with Trout the last couple of seasons, is that he hasn't been the number one hitter in fantasy, I think, in like 4 or 5 years.
Just let me give the numbers. That's all. 2014, all right, relax, Chris. 2014, he stole 16 bases and was the number one hitter in fantasy. 2015, he stole 11 bases and he was the number seven hitter in points leagues, number six in Roto. Now, when he was the number one hitter in 2014, you take those fantasy points, you put him this year, or they put him last year, and he would have been the number seven hitter.
It's a totally different offensive environment, though. Like, that was during the middle of kind of a dead ball period relative to the rest of the last 25 years. Offense was down. Remember, that was...
Yeah.
Do you guys remember being worried about offense around baseball?
Well, I guess... And also, like, Trout is a much better hitter now because he's walking more than he's striking out now. At that point, he had 83 walks to 184 Ks. But... I guess my point is, if he steals 16 bases, he's probably not going to be the number one hitter in fantasy.
Okay.
It's not a criticism. I would take him first overall, but I'm just pointing it out. Like, Yelich, if Yelich is a 35 homer, 30 steal guy, he might be more valuable than Mike Trout.
You're underselling Christian Yelich.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace for a lot more than that. So, like, it makes sense that Trout is behind him right now. I imagine Trout's still behind Bellinger, too, even though the power's picked up again, but he went through a little bit of a home run drought there.
All right, here are the best hitters in fantasy so far. In points, it's Yelich, Bellinger, Trout. In Roto, it's Yelich, Bellinger, Story, Josh Bell, Mike Trout.
Yeah, like that. It's been true for a couple of years. Like, this is something that we've talked about the last couple of years. Like, Heath had Jose Altuve as the number one player 2 years ago, and he had Betts as the number one player. Like, you can always make a case for someone ahead of Mike Trout, and right now you can make a case for Cody Bellinger. I think you can make a better case for Christian Yelich ahead of Mike Trout. Christian Yelich's last 365 days are, like, it looks like he's been playing at Coors Field in the mid-90s kind of numbers.
Right.
But nobody else has been in the conversation for the number one player for 8 straight seasons like Mike Trout. So even if he finishes third, you're not disappointed in anything Mike Trout does.
You can't be disappointed in that. Like, look, Let's say you did go with Mookie Betts instead. Let's say you went with Jose Altuve instead last year. Let's say you went with Bryce Harper instead when he was coming off the MVP season, which was the one time I made that mistake.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
There are always others in the same range as Trout, but they tend to not, they don't hold that value like Trout does.
Right. No, I agree. I would, like I said, I'd take him number one, but I do think there's a pretty good case for Yelich in particular. And
that's the only one.
Steals are annoying. Like in this Roto league that we're all in, I'm not doing well. I have the second fewest steals in the league. I have Trout and Jose Altuve. I thought between Trout and Jose Altuve, I'd be able to stay afloat in steals. And even when Altuve was healthy, he wasn't running. So, you know, steals are not, for a lot of guys, they're not as predictable as we like them to be.
But also Trout could steal two bases tomorrow and be on pace for 20.
Right. Yeah, he could. And like I say, he got thrown out yesterday. All right, last sneaky storyline. Trevor Story is great. We haven't talked about it. I mean, look, Trevor Story might not be great if he weren't on the Rockies because his home road splits are pretty drastic. But Trevor Story is the number one shortstop in fantasy, one of the best hitters in fantasy. And it just every now and then I think of a player that like we pretty much never bring up, and Trevor Story is someone that we pretty much never bring up.
Yep. He did what he needed to do to repeat last season, which was maintain the reduced strikeout rate and run like he did last year. Those were the two things he had never done before. He's continued them. And so the production has continued. I don't know if he'll finish number one, but he'll be in that same range as Bregman and all those other elite shortstops.
All right, let's talk about yesterday's pitchers. That's all everybody is talking about these days. I've got, four categories. I've got the must starts with an exclamation point, the must starts with a question mark, the other guys like Mike Fiers and Tommy Malone, and some
Mark
guys
Wahlberg.
Who?
Mark Wahlberg.
Gator needs his cat. And
good movie.
It is really funny. Some guys who actually pitched poorly. Okay, the must starts with an exclamation point. Well, I think Masahiro Tanaka. I hope you started him. I'd call him a must start. And 23 swinging strikes, and he actually said that he didn't pitch, that his pitches weren't as sharp as he wanted them. complete game shutout against the Rays. He owns the Rays. Jose Berríos, 8 innings, 1 run, gave up 3 singles in the first inning. And after that, that was it. Lights out. 10 strikeouts against the Red Sox, 22 swinging strikes. Number 5 pitcher in points, number 10 in Rota, Jose Berríos. Luis Castillo and Soroka are a little more interesting because they were really good, but there were maybe some troubling signs. But Tanaka and Berríos. Scott, Tanaka hasn't really had his splitter this year. It's been very inconsistent. Yet, he's got a 3.23 ERA and a 1.10 whip. If he gets his splitter back like he seemed to yesterday, I mean, could we be looking at a really great season for Tanaka if he gets that pitch going?
Yeah, I mean, we could be like he has overachieved his peripherals to this point, which is interesting because he was probably a guy who underachieved his peripherals in the past. So I don't know. And it was coming off 3 straight starts with 4 earned runs. Maybe that was some kind of regression that was happening. I think he's pretty good. I think he's like you said, must start. And yeah, if he hasn't had his best pitch like we're used to seeing him have, that might explain why the strikeout rate is down and maybe there are better times ahead. I just have a hard time imagining his numbers getting even better than this because they're already so much better than we're used to seeing from him in a way that seems unsustainable.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, since his rookie season, you know, since the elbow injury, he's had better ERAs when he's had a lower strikeout rate. Could be totally fluky. I don't know, but strikeout rate's down a little bit this year, but his numbers are a little better. Chris, Berríos, 8 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, and top 10 pitcher, 10th in Roto, 5th in points.
He's really good. I think there's probably a little bit of him pitching over his head so far. The peripherals don't quite match up with the ERA, but he's very good. Like if somebody values him as a top 5 starting pitcher, then you can go ahead and trade him. But it's not like I'm expecting him to be bad moving forward. You know, his Sierra is more like in the mid-threes range than, three. So there might be a little bit of regression coming, but it's going to be really hard to find someone who values Berríos as a top five or top 10 starting pitcher and is willing to give you a guy like, I'm not even sure who.
Can I interrupt you? Because like a month ago, I said that I thought Berríos was a top five pitcher rest of season. I don't know when I said it. And the reason is competition. I think it will have a very, very easy schedule, perhaps the easiest schedule in baseball, and wins. I think he'll get plenty of those. And what's his record right now? He's 8-3.
8-3.
I mean, you could argue he should have a better record than that. He's got on the best team in baseball in terms of record, and he's a 2.86 ERA. So I actually think Berríos might outperform his peripherals and be a better fantasy pitcher.
Okay, so my thing is, you made that case last time, and so far it has been true. He actually has a 3.96 Sierra, so I 3.94 and a 3.52 FIP. But that would, like, if the competition is easier, that would show up in his peripherals as well. There's no reason to think that he's going against worse hitters, so he won't strike as many out, but he'll get more. Like, you would think if the competition level's lower, it would show up in the peripheral. So, like I said, I think he's more of a mid-threes ERA guy, but yeah, he'll be very good. It's not a question of that. It's a question of whether he'll be elite moving forward. I don't quite buy it.
So you'd rather have Trevor Bauer?
I don't know. I'm not necessarily. That's the thing is, I was kind of rambling my way towards trying to find someone who I would trade him for, and it's pretty tough. Like I think I'd probably rather have Steven Strasburg, but that's close.
It's tough to find 10 pitchers to take over Jose Berríos. Scott, you have him. Where do you have Berríos?
I mean, my rankings are in need of an update desperately since I was just on vacation, but he's probably outside my top 15.
Yeah, 19th.
But like the thing is, you got the guys who are so clearly better that nobody's going to trade them. Like obviously Verlander and Scherzer and the aces who have pitched up to their ace potential in every way. And then you have the ones like Bauer, like Syndergaard, who still look like aces in a number of ways, but have underachieved to in a way that's a little concerning. And in which case, would you definitely want to trade Berríos for them? I mean, maybe you could, but are you for sure winning that trade?
No, I don't think so. No, especially Syndergaard. I mean, you can't trade it for Syndergaard, right? I mean, Syndergaard's on the IL. I know they say he's going to miss one start, but still, I'm not doing that.
No, I agree.
I agree Berríos has overachieved, but there's so few pitchers who are capable of giving you the innings and the strikeout. Like, you have one of those guys, you're probably just not messing with them because, like, it's such a luxury.
And pitching is so hard to predict moving forward that if you're trading two guys in the same range, you're flipping a coin.
Okay,
and hoping that you get the right side.
Let me speed us up here so we can get. I really want to get to Zach Wheeler to have an interesting year and another bad start yesterday. But Luis Castillo, 6 walks yesterday in another great start against Houston. 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, but 6 walks. He actually has a 1.11 whip despite 44 walks and 87 2/3 because he's been so hard to hit, Luis Castillo, and he has the 4th highest ground ball rate in baseball. The guy who has the 3rd highest ground ball rate in baseball is Mike Soroka, who not striking guys out in his last 2 starts. He said he hasn't had the feel for his slider, and that is his strikeout pitch. With Castillo and Soroka, ride it out, sell high. What do you think?
I think you could sell high on Soroka. Yeah. If someone views him as a top 20 starting pitcher, I think he's probably going to be more like a Dallas Keuchel. If you look at the minor league track record, wasn't really a strikeout pitcher for the most part. Hasn't been a strikeout pitcher in the majors. But he does get a ton of ground balls, and he's got good command and good control. But I think he can be a good pitcher, but he'll need one of those seasons where everything goes really well for him to be an ace.
Scott, what about
Castillo? That might be a scenario where you package Soroka with something else for like a Syndergaard and do a combo buy low, sell high thing there.
Are you worried about Castillo and all the walks?
I wouldn't say I'm unconcerned, but he's such a standout in the other 2 FIP measurements, the strikeouts and home run prevention, because he's a good ground ball pitcher, like you said, that if there's, like, that's how you can get away with walking that many batters. I'm probably not looking to deal him or anything.
235 BABIP and 84.6% strand rate. So, I mean,
yeah. But 226 ERA. I think you definitely try to sell high if you can.
I think, yeah, you got to aim really high because we like Castillo.
It's just, again, like you're not giving up a pitcher of Castillo's caliber without getting a similar pitcher.
Yes.
A pitcher who could beat that. And like, who's giving up that pitcher?
I would trade Castillo for Bauer.
It just feels. Yeah, I would too. I would too.
Okay.
Like Bauer,
rank
Strasburg.
These guys,
so I just feel, if I feel like there are better uses of my time if I'm going to try making trades than. Because I feel like a lot of those trades are just like. You could try it.
All right.
I guess it doesn't hurt to try something
so
like Bauer.
Rank Tanaka, Barrios, Soroka. No, sorry. Rank Tanaka, Castillo, Soroka. Brios is ahead of them.
Castillo, Tanaka, Soroka. Yeah, that's how I'd rank those three. I'm not sure Brios is ahead of Castillo for me. They're probably about... I might put Castillo ahead.
Okay. All right, let's go to the next section. The must-starts? Question mark. Are these guys must-starts? Rick Porcello, 7 scoreless innings. Is it only 7? Seven. At Minnesota, 8 strikeouts. Last 12 starts, he has a 3.30 ERA and a 1.05 whip. Yanni Chirinos, decent start at the Yankees. 6 innings, 3 runs, 2 home runs. He has a 3 ERA. Joey Lucchesi in his last 6 starts, he has 5 starts of 6 or more innings. Right after we dropped him in the For the People League. In his first 8 starts, he had only 1 start of 6 or more innings. So Lucchesi's pitching better lately. And Miles Michaelis. 91% owned, 75% started, 6 scoreless innings against Miami, coming off 2 bad starts in a row. So are they must-starts? Porcello, Chirinos, Lucchesi, and Michaelis.
Michaelis by no means is a must-start. It was nice to see him have a good start against the Marlins because they're the Marlins, and if he had had a mediocre start against them, I might have just dropped him. So I guess you can keep him around, but no, he's definitely not a must-start based on what he's done so far this season. His peripherals are... all at least a run worse than they were last year. He hasn't been the same guy. So, no, I don't think he's a must-start at all.
I don't think any of them are must-starts. I think all of them are I guess Lucchesi has graduated to this point now where they're must-own and like they're good enough that, okay, I don't have great matchups here. I could go with this guy, and hopefully he'll give me some innings, turn in a win. But none of them are... like peripheral darlings, like guys who we feel like could take a next step. They're all probably going to finish with an ERA around 4. I know Chirinos is much lower than that right now, but you know his ERA is like a run lower than it should be according to those other metrics, and I imagine he'll be around 4 too. And a 4 ERA for a guy like that who you just want to plug into your lineup sometimes, that's really not bad in this environment.
He is a
We're
spark.
Used to seeing
right?
it as bad.
Yeah,
he
Chirinos.
Is a spark. Yes.
So that's the one caveat I would say is Chirinos could be a must start as a spark.
And he's 7-3, and he's been used as a starter in each of his last 5 appearances, not with an opener. Okay, so those are the question mark must starts. Apparently, none of them are Porcello, Chirinos, Lucchesi, and Michaelis. How about the other guys? Mike Fiers, 75% owned. Mike Fiers, his last 8 starts is 5-0 with a 2.45 ERA. That includes a no-hitter. He also has 32 strikeouts and 51 and a third and a 1.53 BABIP.
Yep.
Andrew Cashner, 5 quality starts in his last 7. The only 2 exceptions in that 7-start stretch were a bad start at Colorado and also a bad start at home against San Francisco. Tommy Malone, he has been used, I think, 3 straight times with an opener, and he's been really, really good. That's Malone, 21% owned for Seattle. Tyler Beede, first career win. I don't think we care about him. Eliezer Hernandez, we do care about a little bit, so that's good to know, 8% owned. In terms of Fiers, Cashner, and Malone, ownership percentages are very different for these guys, but should they be owned?
Fiers
is way over-owned.
Yeah.
75% is silly.
I get it, the kind of run he's been on
and he's a 2-star
finding reliable pitchers, but that's... like, we've seen stretches from him in the past where the command is so spot on that he does dominate for stretches, but it always unravels. We didn't start Mike Fiers, right? There's that
right.
whole song for our podcast. Like, And the thing is, in those past times when he dominated, it was with a lot of strikeouts, and he's not doing this now. I mean, just in terms of BABIP, like you said, being insanely low, like this is all going to fall apart for Fires, and it's going to be sooner than later.
Okay. We have some Gin Blossoms team name Tuesday, so make sure you stay tuned for that. I'm guessing we don't want Andrew Cashner, but Tommy Malone, are you interested in the strides he has made with the opener?
I'm just. I guess Baltimore, he's kind of Mike Fiers light.
He does get Baltimore this weekend. Yeah.
You know, he's 32 years old. We were talking about him in the same context when he was 25, first breaking into the league. Hey, this guy doesn't strike out many hitters, but you know. Maybe.
But he is striking out hitters. He's got 32 strikeouts and 32 and two thirds
over a really small sample. I will say, a lot of swinging strikes.
If you're watching our video show, you'll see that he has a little mugshot right next to his name, and it's the Washington Nationals. Generally speaking, if the picture next to your name is from a different team than the one you currently pitch on, you will not be good moving forward. That's just
all right.
It's not a hard and fast rule, but I think it generally won't steer you wrong in life.
All right, some guys who actually pitched poorly yesterday, because, you know, everybody was talking about all the great pitching performances. Scott and Chris couldn't stop talking about it. Who pitched poorly yesterday? Zach Wheeler has a 4.94 ERA. I was in and out tuning in and out of this game, I guess I should have said. Apparently, there was some pretty bad defense behind him, and according to my Mets fan friend, the Mets just have a terrible defense, which I'm sure I could look up. But Wheeler's also been bad with home runs this year. He has allowed the same amount of home runs this year as he did last year in 87 and two-thirds fewer innings. It's two pretty bad starts in a row at the Yankees and at the Braves, so good lineups. His next two matchups are at the Cubs and home against the Braves. I don't know. I keep saying buy low on Zach Wheeler. I believe in Zach Wheeler. Should I believe in Zach Wheeler?
I feel like Zach Wheeler is like the poster boy for kind of how we're having to recalibrate pitching expectations in this environment, because his ERA is approaching 5. And yet, as somebody who owns Zach Wheeler in a league, like, they're taking it start by start, there have been enough great starts that I'm not really that disappointed in him. And, you know, part of that's because the fielding independent pitching stats, which was the term I was trying to come up with before, Chiritos, they suggest his ERA should be a run lower than it is. And so, you know, he's pitched better than that 5 ERA shows. But the other part of it is, like, the strikeout rate is great. He has, I think, more than half a dozen starts with 7 innings. Like, that's just it's so hard to find. Like, it's easier, I guess, to enjoy it in a points league than it is in a roto league, where, you know, okay, 5 ERA over more innings, that's a bad thing. But even so, like, I would still consider him a buy low. And even beyond that, I'm not, like, Zach Wheeler is not the player on my roster I'm cursing right now.
And it is worth noting, as you said, that league-wide ERA is up. I think about a quarter of a run so far this season. It's the second highest it's been in the last decade, at least, when I looked it up yesterday. So, you know, league average for a starter right now is 4.4. So even then, like, a 4.94 is bad, full stop. But he should be closer to maybe a high 3s, 4 ERA guy with a lot of strikeouts, and that'll have a ton of value moving forward.
Would you rather have Mike Soroka or Zach Wheeler?
Wheeler.
I think so.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Kenta Maeda did not pitch that well yesterday. We actually have an email about him, but the email, I'll go ahead and read it right now. It was about his contract and the innings specifications. Let me see. Here it is. It's from Nick in New Jersey. Hey, Julio, Ross, Rich, and Clayton. What? Look at that. They got the email up. Good stuff. Thank you, video crew. Those are Dodgers pitchers. What's the deal with Kenta Maeda's contractual innings bonus? I remember you mentioning it last year, but I can't remember the specifics. Should I be looking to move Maeda after this 2-start week, knowing he won't be around to help me at the end of the season? Here are the specifics, as I found via the internet.
Yeah, it's not like a hard. It's not like he hits 130 innings and gets X dollars.
I'm about to give them Chris Towers. He will receive.
I have it in front of me too.
$1 million for each of 15 and 20 starts. $1.5 million for 25, 30, and 32 starts. $250,000 bonus for 90, 100, 110, 120, 130, 140, 150, 670, basically every 10 innings, $250,000 bonus, and then a $750,000 bonus for 200 innings. And they, I think what's really interesting is that they seem to be, you know, keeping this contract in mind for all of his starts, because Maeda has only thrown 90 pitches four times this season. Anyway, what do you do if you're the Maeda owner?
It's not like you can sell high. It's not like he's been so good that people are going to be banging down your door to get him on their team. So I think you just stick with him.
I don't know. He's been pretty good. I mean, he's got a strikeout per inning, a 108 whip, 7-4, 3.87 ERA. I mean, that's a really valuable pitcher.
I'm not saying he has.
Do you have his ranking handy? I mean, the 7-4 record, I imagine, elevates him, even though he hasn't been pitching deep into games. It's hard to get that many wins when you're not pitching deep into games.
I'm not saying he's been bad. He's been good, but I don't think he's been so good that people are going to give you some hugely valuable piece in return for Kenta Maeda, because we know what he's done in his major league career. It's not like the person you're trading him for or the person you're trading him to doesn't know.
Well, that's not true. I think a lot of people wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But you look at the last couple of years, and he's been moved to the bullpen each of the last 2 years. Last year it was for, 19 appearances? He made 20 starts and 39 relief appearances.
You're looking at a computer right now. This is not something that people just know off the top of their head.
Yeah, I agree with Adam that people aren't going to be quite that sophisticated in breaking down what's happened for Maeda. They probably just think, he was bad, so they moved him to a bullpen, but he's not bad now.
Like, but he wasn't bad.
I think that's how most people would interpret that, you know, unless they listen to this podcast or they're really that invested in fantasy baseball that they're following the Maeda developments that closely. So I'm with Adam that, like, maybe you could use it to get a Zach Wheeler who's coming off two terrible starts.
Oh, definitely. Very realistic. I don't even know that I'd do that. Because how much longer? Because I think Maeda is going to be better than him while he's in the rotation. I think, I don't know that he will. I don't know that he will.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know that he will either.
I think they'll be similar. So
I think Wheeler's fielding independent pitching stats make him out to be something like Maeda's been, but over more innings. So yeah. I would rather have Wheeler.
Yeah, but Wheeler's actual stats, he's had one good year in his career, basically, and he's giving up a ton of home runs. So, like, I like Wheeler, too, but
Maeda's only had an ERA below 3.8 once in his career.
All right, fair enough.
For what it's worth.
Wade Miley pitched poorly, but I do want to point out that Wade Miley's had a pretty good year, and he has 48 strikeouts in 45 and a third innings, his last 45 and a third. He's actually become a strikeout pitcher, so that's kind of interesting. Danny Duffy was doing okay, and then it fell apart, and I started him in a two-start week. Gross. And that's it. So what else do we have? We have Team Name Tuesday, and we have emails. Team Name Tuesday, Eggs Odorizzi. Come on, we've had that for like 2 years, guys.
Well, why did you put it in the notes?
Because I need to reprimand people for wasting our time.
You are the gatekeeper here, Adam. You decide which emails go in.
Guys, it's like eggs over easy.
Yes.
Oh.
Which I've never had.
I get it now.
By the way.
Finally. I'm glad you explained it.
Well, this one bothers me even more. Luck be a genie tonight. How many times do I have to sing Be a Genie's name to that song?
Adam, hold on. Adam, it's like the Frank Sinatra song. That's what it's referencing.
Joe be a genie too.
Yeah,
that is obviously your ringtone if you listen to this show. So don't act like you made that up. This one's good. Potential replacement closers, Watson and Crick. That's good. Watson and Crick.
And then Crick. I'm not sure Chris, explain that one for real.
That's like a science reference.
Oh, is that two of the people who discovered the double helix?
Yes.
Okay.
I knew it was science, so I had to look it up. The DNA they discovered.
I think there was a couple other people who were involved. Let's not sell them short.
Mo Mondesi, mo problems.
Yeah.
Okay, and here's this email from Mark says Gin Blossoms theme for Chris, which is absolute crap because I am a much bigger Gin Blossoms fan than Chris is. Hyunjin Blossoms.
Sure.
Follow You Rendon.
Yeah.
Matt Whistler's at the bus stop. That's good. Whistler's at the bus stop. That's good.
That's good.
Till I hear it from Chew.
Yep.
Found Trout about you.
Yep.
Could obviously be Found Trout about Chew. And then a football one, Geronimo Allison Road. That might be very a team good. Name for me this year. That's excellent
That's
stuff.
Very good.
Yeah. All right, let's read some emails to finish the show. By the way, Justin Upton homered in his first pitch that he saw on the season, and Shohei Ohtani's on fire. Jonathan emails us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I was looking at XFIP and Sierra leaderboards. I noticed that Verlander's really low on the XFIP list. Went a bit deeper into it. His strand rate is 94.6%. Do you think that Verlander might be a sell-high guy and regression is coming? His advanced stats say that Verlander should be a 3.3-3.5 ERA guy.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. Maybe he has a 2.8 ERA moving forward.
Yeah, no, I don't care what the stats say. Like, we know how good he is. He's
that, this is one of those things where he'll probably regress on his left on base percentage, his strand rate, but will do better suppressing home runs or, you know, some, like, he's so good that I would bet he'll just be awesome moving forward.
Also, just final thought on this. If you... Oh, but the emailer said he'd rather have Cole than Verlander. It's reasonable.
I think it's an interesting question.
It's reasonable. But if you look at the leaders in strand rate, I mean, it usually is the best pitchers in baseball, right? Because they're just great. You get on base, they're more likely to strand a runner.
And they're, is that they're right? More likely to be good because they're good at stranding runner.
Sure. Okay, this one is from Carl. Would you drop Framber Valdez to pick up Yu Darvish on waivers?
Yeah, I would expect Yu Darvish will be better. I'm much more interested in Yu Darvish. I wrote something on cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball yesterday. And he's basically swapped out his slider for his cutter, and it's led to some really good results. So I'm pretty pleased with what Darvish has done since May.
I'm not keen on dropping Valdez, but I guess if you're in the type of league where Darvish is unowned, I guess you might have to do that.
From No Name, dear Rick, Neil, Vivian, and Mike. Oh, no idea. Should I pick up Jesus Luzardo or Chris Paddock?
Oh, Paddock. I mean, Luzardo is hopefully going to be what Paddock has been.
Right.
So why not take Paddock?
What is Young Ones?
Yeah, I'd rather have
Young
if
Ones.
If I have to pick one.
Is a TV British shit sitcom called Young Ones. That's Rick, Neil, Vivian, and Mike. Hola, muchachos. This is Philip from Cincinnati. Rest of season. Do you like Anthony Rizzo, Pete Alonso, or Josh Bell? Also, is an avocado a fruit or a vegetable?
Rizzo, and it's very obviously a fruit.
I think it's a vegetable.
It's a fruit. Actually, in Brazil, they eat avocados with sugar. So, fruit.
Like, this is the same debate that happens with I think botanically speaking, an avocado is a fruit. But did you know botanically speaking,
a
banana is a berry? Like, it's just kind of a dumb standard. Nutritionally speaking, I think an avocado would be closer to a vegetable.
It is considered a fruit. How about that?
Of course it's a fruit.
All right, last email here. I've been accused of ripping someone off, and I'd like to address it. It is from Andrew C. in Cincinnati. Adam, this is good-natured, by the way. You said on yesterday's show that you invented/wanted the stat quality appearance to be implemented in your league. I want to point out that I discussed this and wondered if there was such a thing in my email to you in March 12th, which I included below. I'm not here to dispute who thought of it first. I'll let you have the credit since it's your birthday week and also your first Father's Day. Just when this rule is eventually implemented, please ask Mr. Manfred to name it the Andrew Amendment for quality starts. Of course, in honor of your son and not at all myself. All right, so Andrew,
here's...
No, wait. Andrew has his original email in this because he says I ripped him off. I play in a 5x5 league that replaces wins with quality starts. I could probably find the answer by Googling, but I want to hear your take on how openers could affect the quality start category. If Charlie Morton enters the game in the second inning up 1-0, pitches 6 full innings, and the game ends with the Rays winning 1-0, does that award a win and a quality start to Morton, just a win to Morton, a win to the opener, or does no Rays opener/follower receive anything, and whoever pitched the 9th receives a save? The opener philosophy makes quality start leagues more interesting. There's nothing in there about quality appearance. Nothing.
And
not
we can
not
all
at
agree.
All.
We can all agree that you stole this.
Not
from
at all,
Andrew.
Not at all.
And We'll be talking to legal.
I did not steal anything, Andrew. I do appreciate. I will name it the Andrew Amendment, certainly after my son, but not after you. But thank you for the email. I have to go. I want everybody to remember the time when Chris interrupted me to give Kenta Maeda's contract details. That was very rude. But I'm glad we talked about all that pitching from yesterday. We'll be back tomorrow on Fantasy Baseball Today. See you later, everybody.